Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stayed glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in since they going back to showing Action Tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 98. Yes, that means after this, we have one more to go till epic episode 100, and it certainly will be epic. I can vouch for that. Yeah, I've already recorded it, because, you know, something so epic, you have to record ahead of time just to edit and do all that stuff, but that's here and right there. Meanwhile, back to this episode. On this episode, you know, this is going to be kind of special for me, because this is a movie I've known for about a year, and I wanted to review it, but I don't know if I should, because I don't know if I could remain partial. Of course, for that reason, I didn't watch it. Like, oh, if it's good, am I going to be partial? And then I watched it, and it was good. But, you know, I finally decided to review it. We're not actually talking about an anime. We are talking about something that I feel at most would fall into the fusion category, but it really is a cartoon. Because of how abstract it is in some places. But here's the thing. We're not talking about an animation from Japan, but we're not even talking about an animation from America. No, no, no. Ladies and gentlemen, we are on our way to France. A country that I feel is becoming pretty much one of the premier leaders in, particularly in hand-drawn animation, probably right behind Japan, which, you know, I find interesting considering that Japan, a lot of its cinema, you know, is hugely, you know, a lot of their directors and stuff are hugely not only influenced by American directors, but also influenced by French directors. It's part of that sort of, I think if you look at the three biggest countries as far as film, it's Japan, America, and France. Or at least in live-action film, it's France and America, and probably Japan right behind it. But at least to me, though, in regards to animation, those seem to be the big three. And the United States is now taking its talents to Cleveland. I said big three, and I couldn't resist the LeBron joke. Anyhow, why am I talking about France? Well, our animated movie, which was created in 2011, hails from France. And as far as me talking about why I'm partial, is because the title of today's animated feature is, let me do the French name first, Le Chat du Rabbin, or in English, The Rabbi's Cat. Those who know me can see why I'm kind of worried about remaining partial. For those who don't, I'm Jewish. And I'm very proud of my Judaism, even though I don't spout about it all the time. But, you know, I am very, very proudly Jewish. And, you know, it's one of those things like, oh, well, am I going to be remain partial to it? But, you know, I should never doubt my abilities to remain partial to anything, because I am indeed a geek through and through. But no, it was very fun to watch this. You know, when they say French is the language of love, or at least it's a beautiful language, I do agree. I find it to be a very fascinating language just to listen to, regardless of whether I'm understanding it. You know, thankfully, yes, I do have subtitles, so yes, I did understand technically what was going on in this movie. But as far as, you know, being able to understand directly from the speech, no, I need the subtitles. That being said, it is a lovely language, and it's a lovely, you know, language to listen to as far as an animated feature. It just has a different feel to it, especially when you're so used to either listening to English or Japanese. It's this sort of welcome, refreshing change, for that matter. But with this story, you know, that, you know, a hand-drawn animation style that's influenced by the Fleischer cartoons, though as I'll argue later, I'll say a bit more by the heavy metal cartoons. And if you see this movie, which, by the way, you can find this movie on Netflix. It's on Netflix. Just search The Rabbi's Cat. And I do highly suggest, at least check, regardless of what my opinion is going to be, I always highly suggest checking out new things. I actually have a couple of animations that I've found on Netflix that I do actually plan on reviewing that look interesting, and I look forward to, like I said, possibly reviewing. But yeah, in regards to this story, there's going to be some things and some themes that, in regards to Judaism, that before I get into the review proper, I feel I need to explain. Some terms that, you know, for instance, I'm going to be using terms like Talmudic, and, you know, things like that, some biblical terms, because in regards to the art style and some of the terms and the story and that stuff, there is some of that. Mind you, I also want to add before I start that this story in no means is anything religious. It's just that the background of the story is rooted in Judaism, as far as, you know, the characters being Jewish and that stuff. So there's a Jewish feel to it, but at no means is this a religious film by any means. Or at least I feel it's not. Maybe somebody of another faith watching it would say otherwise. Again, this is the partiality I was worried about. You know, me being Jewish, I don't see this as a very religious film whatsoever. There's really nothing religious in this film. It's not, you know, any morals is preseen, you know, considering that this is a based off a French graphic novel by Joan Safar, who is also one of the co-directors of the film, mind you. You know, being that he is Jewish and a lot of his Jewish heritage is in it and everything. But, you know, that's just what it is. It's heritage. It's history. It's culture. It's not the preaching of any religious belief. In fact, there's probably a lot more shown of Jews being assholes, if anything, in a way, in regards to, you know, in this particular story. This movie, by the way, is based off volume 1, 2, and 5 of the comic, which I'm going to get into a little bit later for a story, but one of the threads that happens, and I'll talk about this later, which story is, you know, the rabbi's complete disbelief that there could be black Jews. Because one of these stories that happens in this movie is that, you know, they run to a Russian painter who wants to, you know, who's on the search for the Ethiopian Jews. Which, again, that's another thing that shocked me. It's like, wow, we're actually talking about Ethiopian Jews, which not a lot of people know about, that there is Ethiopian Jews. But yeah, he's disbelieved because there's no such thing as black Jews. So, like, yeah, that kind of shows our religion, if anything, into as far as being a bit of an asshole. But you know, with that being said, allow me to explain some very simple things about Judaism as far as, you know, religion is concerned. You know, we believe in the Old Testament. You know, the first part, five books of Moses, also known as the Torah. And then the rest of it is, you know, the 12 books of the prophet and the Psalms. I think most people who've had some sense of a religious background, at least know what the Old Testament is. But the main thing I want to talk about is the Talmud. Now, I'm going to use things like, it's very Talmudic. This part of the story is very, you know, has a very Talmudic feel to it. When I say those things, I'm talking about a book called the Talmud. Now, the best definition I can give, and as per my mother, who is a preschool director and preschool teacher of Judaism, is that it's basically commentary on Jewish law that rabbis will use a lot to create stories to teach the law. But basically, it's commentary on law. It's filled with stories of, like, here's a situation that happened. So what does the law say? Well, the law could say this, and the law could say that, because, goddammit, we're Jews, and we can never make anything easy. And it's basically commentary on how do you, you know, appropriate the law, how do you judge the law, how do you use the law in this situation. But let's be honest, it's almost as if it's a book of the Supreme Court, in a way, to put it in. It's, okay, does the law qualify here? Have they broken the law? Have they not broken the law? Blah, blah, you know. Technical stuff that rabbis use to make long-winded discussions where they argue with each other for 12 hours and never come to an agreement. I've seen it happen, folks. I've been in a room with more than, like, two rabbis. It's not a pretty sight. It's like, okay, we're in a room with more than three rabbis. Place your bets on how long it takes for us to get into a disagreement. 5-minute mark. All right, Jamie, you picked 4:59. You win the jar. But you... It's my culture, it's my heritage, we are what we are. What you gonna do? So, with that being said, let's get into our review proper. So, our story takes place in 1920s Algeria. It follows a rabbi and his cat, and he also lives with his daughter. One day, the cat eats the parrot and gains the ability to talk. And so continues the story of their everyday life with a talking cat who comes under pressure that he now wants to be bar mitzvahed. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Rabbi's Cat. Let's start off with music. Now, I really love the overall score of this. There isn't sort of there is an insert theme, so let's start off with that as well. As you were just listening to it, I love it. It's just this, love the Middle Eastern and Jewish sound. And you think, well, Middle Eastern, Jewish, those go together. Well, you get Middle Eastern and more sort of Arabic and sort of is, you know, the sounds more towards the Eastern aspect of the Middle East, but then there's sort of, you know, Israeli and Jewish, and again, different cultures have different sounds, you know, if you listen sort of the music with, you know, they sound the same, but at the same time, if you listen to a song from Egypt as opposed to a song in Saudi Arabia, there is going to be some slight differences there, again, based off culture and influence. This definitely has more of an Israeli and a bit of an Algerian influence to it. I definitely hear aspects of both the country and the culture there. Also, the sort of very jazz aspect, fitting sort of the 1920s theme. But, you know, the very sort of slick, you know, just that the jazz aspect of it, I love. I love the use of the instruments. I think it's a very good sort of opening title theme for the movie. And then the rest of the score, again, fitting into that same, you know, the Middle Eastern feel. Or should I say, in this case, the sort of Middle Eastern, you know, Northern Africa sort of feel to it. And again, the aspect of Judaism, sort of Jewish music definitely in there, in particular with the instruments and everything. So overall, I thought the score was good. I don't think there's a lot of it. Music wasn't a huge player in this movie. But you know what? There was just enough of it, and it worked well. Again, it has that, you know, as I always say, music's role is to be there to enhance, but to never overtake. And certainly the music here does that. All the music enhances the scenes. It adds verbiage to the scene. It adds unique feels to the scenes. But at the same time, it's in no way overpowers. If anything, it's a bit too subdued, because you can forget that the music is even there. And not that, I mean, that forget, like, oh my god, it completely disappeared. It was so in transit into the scene that it enhanced it and you forgot it was there. That good thing. I'm talking about more of, like, it's a bit too subdued and you forget there's even music in the movie. And you have to go back and listen. I'm like, oh, wow, there was music in this scene. And it certainly does enhance, and you realize that it did enhance the scene, but it was that thing of, you know, you kind of forgot it was even there. It was more of a forgotten, more of a, you know, let go of that there's anything else in the scene because you're so entranced in it. With that, let's move on to animation. Now, they say that they are influenced by the Fleischers, in particular Popeye and Betty Boop. Which, and, you know, I see that in the character designs, as I'll get to in a second. And I do see the Fleischer influences, which, by the way, again, when I talk about partiality, this is another thing that kind of I felt I wouldn't be impartial to. Because, again, somebody's influenced by the Fleischers, in particular Betty Boop and Popeye. You know, in 2011, you fill my heart. Well, production started in 2008, but still, you fill my heart with glee. Hand-drawn animation influenced by the Fleischer cartoons, which shows you just how wonderful those cartoons were. That there's, what, 1920? It's almost been 100 years. People are still being influenced by it. I mean, that's how grand that animation is. But at the same point in time, I do kind of call a bit of bullshit on this. And, I mean, like I said, I do see that, but to me, the animation seems a whole lot more influenced by heavy metal, as far as the heavy metal movie. Which, and, you know, I guess to be fair, a lot of that was also influenced by the Fleischer cartoons as well. But basically, to quote, and again, I'm taking this from Wikipedia, so yes, take it with a grain of salt. But it says here that one of the director's sources of inspiration was the American animation of the 1930s, in particular the Fleischer Studios, which Safar described as characterized by multi-ethnic production crews and for portraying also the dark aspects of society in cartoons such as Betty Boop and Popeye, which again, I question which cartoons did he watch. But, also, in order to generate more personality for the drawn characters in The Red Vice Cat, some of the scenes were staged in a partisan suburb loft in the summer of 2008 with props and the cast fully costumed, as actors performed and invented their characters' personal motion habits. The design team observed closely and drew what they picked up. Which, by the way, that is a very common thing. You know, Disney does that a lot. A lot Disney does that. From its beginning, Disney is any solid animation studio, any solid animated movie has that part of it. So, again, that tells you right there that there was a lot of effort put into it. And for that matter, the animation is beautiful and gorgeous, and I love watching it. Again, like I said, I see those Fleischer influences. I think there's probably more of an influence, at least artistically, from heavy metal. I mean, the art style, I've seen a picture of the covers of his graphic novels, so definitely they also have Safar's art style. I mean, obviously he's a director, so he did obviously have a lot of influence on the art direction. But yeah, again, when I watch it, I just get more of the heavy metal influence, in particular in the crazy Russian's death scene, where there's a scene to where, you know, in the movie, poor explanation there, the part that's based off the fifth volume. When they're going to search for the Ethiopian Jews, they go on a search together, they find this Russian paper who's searching for the rabbi with his brother who's Islamic. Again, we'll get to that in a little bit. The Russian painter and a crazy Russian they meet along with the cat get into this Russian car. I'm blanking on the name of the car, but it's like one of the cars that also has treads and everything that was like popular in the 1920s. And they're making their way across their desert. And they have to stop, and they run into this nomadic Islamic tribe that's, again, more, you know, as opposed to the brother who's Muslim and peaceful, this is more of a, you know, strictly Islamic tribe, you know, that hates disbelievers. And there's an argument that happens, the crazy Russian kills one of them, and then he continues to basically yap, 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 and then threatens the prince, which leads to him, you know, when he pulls out his gun, getting stabbed by six different swords, and blood spilling everywhere. It's a crazy scene. And the only thing I can think of when I see that scene is heavy metal. So I guess that's where that comes from. But, you know, it is a beautifully drawn movie. I love the animation. I love the overall style and feel. You know, there's a lot of Jewish patterns and a lot of Jewish and Talmudic feel to the animation as well. That I guess as a Jew, it makes it feel very familiar to me. You know, even though this is taking place in 1920s Algeria, there's a very familiar feeling with this animation. Not just that it's the Fleischer, which I've seen all the time, but also those Jewish patterns and tendencies and the feeling of a Jewish home, for that matter, when they're at home, is something that's very familiar and allows me to connect with the film. As far as the character designs, I love the character designs. I think they're gorgeous. I think they're beautiful. I love the cat's design. I love his... There's a sleekness. Because he's not this goody-two-shoes hero. He's slick. He's a cat. He's crafty and everything. And I love the sleekness. And the gray tones, I think, perfectly exemplify that. That very, not surreal, but abstract feel to his design, I think, works very, very well. Along with the simple color scheme. And that being very skinny. Again, it's almost in a way a representation of the Jewish people in a way to where, you know, we're not the strongest, you know, we're not the fastest, you know, we're not the best looking, but god damn it, we are crafty, slippery, sleek motherfuckers. and you know, we're more intelligence based. again, sort of more of, I guess, a representation of, you know, stereotypes of the Jewish people that are, let's be honest, my fellow Jews. It is a bit true sometimes. Not all of us, I mean. There are a few of us who are good looking, but, yeah. We were not, let me put it away in a chant. I believe that we weren't born to be models. Okay, it didn't work, but yeah, let's be honest. If everybody else be packing, us Jews be lacking. So I'll leave it at that. So, but that being said, I love the rabbi. I love sort of the roundness. There's a very round, friendly, fatherly feeling to his design that I very much like. And then, you know, his brother, or both of his brothers, I find to be very well done. Let me go down and find his name. Malik of the Lions, the strength around him being that he's from deep from Africa. Again, there he's, you know, very strong, you know, being from the jungles, everything. I love that. This very sort of hard exterior as well. And then, of course, his other brother, the Islamic brother, being a bit more skinny and different, and yet this sort of very, almost in a way, seeming more wiser than him, in a way. Or at least in certain locations. Everyone's like, and then you come to the daughter, Zabaya. I'm just going to sit here and say this right now, because after animation, we get to acting. I am going to completely butcher every name. I probably have already butchered the director / artist's name. But that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to butcher everybody's name. I am a dumb American who is not taking a lick of French classes. At best, I have beginner's one Spanish to where I know how to the emblems of how to say Spanish or somewhat. By no means can I translate. Same with Japanese. Best I know how to do is count 1 to 10 in Spanish and Japanese. That being said, of course, that probably has a lot more to do with watching wrestling. Every time a Mexican wrestler does, you know, 10 punches on the turnbuckle, like, uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, seis, cinco, siete. Same for the Japanese wrestling. You know, it, ni, san, chi, ut, no. And I probably butchered those as well. But I'm going to completely butcher and screw up people's name. But back to animation. I love her design. You know, there's a sexiness to her design that I like. I'm like, oh, wow, Tommy liked this sexiness. Oh, she must be slim with big tits. No, she's not. She's very Rubelesque, is I think the best way to put it. Is she's not slim. She has a bit of an hourglass figure, but it's not like she's ultra slim in the middle. You know, she is, you know, her character design is that of a regular girl. You know, a bit wide in the hips and everything, you know, but not super slim, not busty, not anything. But there's a sort of a sexy feel to her design. Maybe it's the clothes. But, you know, I love it because it shows, hey, you don't need to have a girl with a big bust or slim waist or slim belly or everything. You can show a sort of normal, healthy-looking girl and still make it sexy. Is the point I'm trying to make. And that's something I really like. Like, this is what I'm talking about with when I talk about sexiness being a sort of personality characteristic as opposed to a body looking. Because here, her personality and her characteristics add to her having this very sexy feel. Of course, the voice actress helps that as well, as we'll get to in a little bit. But overall, you know, the Russian's design with the blonde and sort of very ruggedness, I thought was very well done. The African girl, again, I thought her design was very, again, sexy at the same time. She looks healthy. She's robust. She's not this ultra skinny, you know, oh my God, how is she even standing up type of look to her. You know, she's robust. She looks healthy. She looks like a normal human being. And mind you, not all the girls are portrayed as sexy. Like, Cadet, you know, she has her distinct physical features, and she's a bit different. She's more of a, you know, how do I put this? She's not a mean girl. But, you know, she's Zafir's friend. And she's more normal. Like, she's... I don't know how to describe it without being offensive. It's like, she has this long, pointy nose. She reminds me of Usopp from One Piece, basically. She's not portrayed as ugly, but she's not attractive. Maybe that's the better way. It's like, Zafir and the effing girl, they are attractive. They're attractive and sexy, but at the same time, they're shown as healthy and normal. Whereas Cadet and some of the other girls are not attractive. And that's the thing about all the characters, is that there's a very natural, very healthy human feel to them. You know, they have weight to the character designs that make them work. All the color schemes with each of the characters, each works for their personality. And I like that very much. Then you have the, I guess, the action scenes, the few ones we have. I brought up the mention of the crazy Russian with the, you know, nomadic Islamic tribe. The action is very simple. There's not a lot of action. That's one scene. And there's a couple, you know, like an alligator attacking their boat and then having to shoot it. But again, it's all in a sort of... That's where I think more of the Fleischer aspect comes from, the action scenes. Now, there is a change in the animation that happens towards the end. You know, there's a point to where, you know, they've gone on this journey and, you know, the rabbi and his brother can't go any further, so the Russian painter and the African girl... Now, by the way, to bring up what happens in the story, as they go on the journey, they stop in this town where they meet this African girl who's a bartender. The Russian painter and her fall in love, and, by the way, it's this very hilarious scene. I have to go into explanation to this. So, excuse me as I take a drink, because this is going to be a long explanation. So, the scene is, he's sitting at a bar, he's flirting with her, and he's, you know, he draws, he dabbles, so he's drawing her very well, and being very respectful of her. And I don't know if he's English or French or whatever, but this very racist guy comes like, you can't draw him like that, you have to draw him like this. And he shows him his doodles. And he basically shows him Africans as if they're drawn like apes. These very racist drawings. So what does this Russian do? He pulls back and punches the fuck out of this motherfucker. He's like, I like him. He's respectful of me. I get... They end up getting together, and it cuts to the boarding, and the rabbi's knocking, like, are you up yet? And she opens the door, like, you know, he's not ready yet. He's like, okay! Looks like we're having a friend. There's even a wedding and everything in Mazel Tov, and... Again, I don't want to ruin the entire movie. I find it fun. I find it joyful. I laughed my ass off at both the scenes. That and the, you know, wedding scene to where there was a discussion like, I want to marry him. Why I can't marry... Rabbi, would you marry us? Why I can't marry you? Because you're not Jewish. Well, I would be gladly be Jewish, but I guess can't make you Jewish because what happens if you do something wrong? And here, let me get glass. And do you... Yeah. All right, and break the glass. Crash. Mazel tov. That's the speed bullets of that scene, by the way. I really enjoyed those scenes. Again, I'll get to the story in a little bit. But yeah. So, going back to... I went on this... Where did I go? Oh, that's right. I was going here initially, and then the train went... right there. Or as a lucid dream would say. See that train rolling off the track? That's my fault. Or in this case, it's my fault. Not his fault, but... Where was I? Oh, that's right. Please, you know, please excuse my dumbness. I'm having fun with this review. But, you know, the animation does change when, you know, they leave them, and they actually do make it to the supposed New Jerusalem and the Ethiopians. And it's a bit more sketchy, I think a bit more Fleischer for that matter. And I would almost say almost offensive the fact that once they get to the Ethiopian Jews, it's a bit more... I don't know. Maybe it was that they were running out of budget, and those were the last scenes. And so they had to do them a bit more quickly, and that they rushed them, I don't know. But, yeah, in particular when the guards, and like, the abstractness of it. It was a very jarring, because it was very different to the animation. It was almost Canadian. Oh, Canada. They are going to kill me for that comment. But, you know, besides that, the animation, the action animation, the movement and everything was all well done. It's just that when they got to that last part, and again, I don't know if it was that they were running out of budget money or whatever, but, yeah, it was just this thing to where it was very jarring. Then you have the backgrounds. I love the backgrounds. The backgrounds are just beautiful and gorgeous, and they do a great job of setting up these locations in Northern Africa. And for that matter, Northern and Northern Central Africa, because again, they journeyed to Ethiopia. I think they showcase them basically, if I remember well, where Algeria is. I think it's on the west side of... I'm trying to remember my geography. I believe it's on the east, or it's east of Libya, or it's west. Excuse me while I look that up, but I know it's Northern Africa. But I think they go down, like, towards the Ivory Coast, and then cut across towards, because it shows them going through the jungle. Yeah, it's to the west of Libya, east, in between Morocco, Tunisia, and Libya. So I believe what they did was they went down through Mali and Algeria, and then cut across. Why am I trying to explain this? I have no idea why in God's green earth I'm trying to... I just had to realize, like, what am I doing? You know where Algeria is. I'm going to guess that you are all intelligent people. You know where Algeria is. The cut down went across. I guess the reason is because they go through the jungle, and I think at some point they get lost and go a bit south and then come back up and whatever. You know what? It's like a Jewish road trip. They go a bit north, they go a bit south, and what should be a 5-minute drive turns into 30 minutes. As we, the Jews, we have no sense of direction. So again, that's very Jewish, very Talmudic in itself. Again, the backgrounds are very beautiful, very gorgeous. Whether it be, you know, show the Algerian city that they're in, which is gorgeous and has this, you know, with the stone buildings and everything, is beautiful, and there's a very Jewish feel to the buildings, to when they're in the jungle and going towards Ethiopia. You know, even the Ethiopian city has that very sort of Jewish feel to it. Of course, that's probably more due to the fact that there's this massive gathering to watch this bar mitzvah. Again, I will get to the cat scene in that, because that is one of my favorites in the movie. Because if there is nothing us Jews are better at, it's at inciting riots. And I'll leave that in your mind. I'll finish with special effects. The special effects are good for what they were. Again, being very abstract, there isn't a lot of them, but the ones that are there are done beautifully. The special effects is very light. to fit with the abstractness. So that is it for animation. I am going to take a break and gather my thoughts and gather my wits and prepare myself, as when we come back, we're going to get into acting and to story. So I'll be right back, folks. After these messages, we'll be right back.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I am a terrible geek. I don't watch Doctor Who, I don't care for anime, I've never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I like Star Wars and Star Trek okay, but I've never really ventured far into the extended universes of either property. Hell, I have never even watched a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I have been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I have been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is, a crippling addiction that I may never recover from. To deal with this borderline personality disorder, I started a podcast in 2007 called
Views from Long Lost.
Every 2 weeks, or so, depending on real life, I pick a particular series, or issue, or character, or whatever to talk about, and then I talk about them, because that's kind of the point of a podcast. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I have a guest, like my semi-regular co-host, the Irredeemable Shag, or my other semi-regular co-host, Thomas DJ, or with another friend from the podcasting world. The show is located at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. From there, you can find the iTunes link, the email address, as well as the backlog of episodes.
Views from the Long Box.
A podcast about comics, or a desperate cry for help? You decide. Every other Tuesday, or so, depending on real life, at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com.
This is Tokyo. Once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
To record another new trailer.
Another one?
Yes. You know that we read comics and then talk about comics, because as we've established, talking about comics you've not read is just dumb.
Yeah, and you make me do it every Thursday.
Well, we've moved.
Have we?
Yes, we have outgrown our old location.
I don't feel like I've moved.
And we have now moved to twotruefreaks.com.
What was that again?
twotruefreaks.com. Hey Kids Comics, still every Thursday at twotruefreaks.com.
Yeah, play it. Come on. Yeah, play it loud. Play it loud.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Illogic. Foolish emotions. A constant irritant.
Intentional freak!
Two!
Come on, the circus. Right next to the dog-faced boy.
true!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit!
It's a super prize package worth $9,388.
Money.
This isn't the biggest bag over the head. Punch in the face I ever got. God damn it!
Ow!
Go away, Peyton.
And now, together by live simulation via the internet, your hosts, Scott Gardner.
He killed a police officer, for Christ's sake!
Yeah, goddamn lucky he didn't kill all of them.
And Chris Honeywell.
Keep away! Keep away from me!
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
Looking at me?
Yeah, because she thought you're some kind of freak. Now come on, hey, let's God, go.
She likes me, eh?
No way.
Shut up, you freak!
Julius, you...
I said shut up! It's a man home! A man home!
TwoTrueFreaks.com.
And welcome back, and... well... let's get into voice acting, and... once again, I must apologize for the extreme butchering of French names that I am going to do. I'm going to apologize. At some point, I'm probably going to start rushing through this just to get it over with. So once again, I do sincerely apologize for the complete butchering of names that I am about to do. I cannot stress this enough. I am truly... truly sorry, I am nothing but a dumb American. So let's have some fun, shall we? So our cast features Francoise Moreau as the cat, Maurice Benichou as the rabbi, Hafsia Rezi as Zalbaya, Jean-Pierre Calfon as Malik of the Lions, Felon as Sheikh Mohammed Safar, Salva Lov as the Russian painter, Daniel Cohen as the rabbi's master, Francoise Damiens as the Belgian reporter, Wachowiak Pizoviak as Vostonov. That's the crazy Russian. Marguerite Obuyet as the African girl. Eric Omosonino as Professor Shalmalian. Alice Horin as Kinedete. And Matthew Almeric as the prince. And speaking of Matthew, I probably should have called Matty J and asked him to do these names. with that being said, in talking about the voice cast, I'm going to refer to the characters as simply as I possibly can rather than the voice actors. That being said, you know, I very much enjoyed the voice actors. As opposed to putting and there was emotion there, but there was very much more of a family, you know, natural feel. Like, you know, because I'm having a conversation, and this is stuff that happens with the family. It's not done in an overly dramatic, it's a very subtle acting aspect to it, which I thought was done extremely well, and I very much like. You know, there can be a tendency sometimes to be over-dramatic in films. You know, in particular, you know, I've talked about, you know, I've gone on and on about Scott McNeil and other voice actors and Tony Jaa and Beck and Notre Dame, which are very over-dramatic roles. It depends on the movie. You know, something like Hunchback of Notre Dame and it being a musical, it has to be a bit over dramatic, because that's what the role calls for. Here, it's much more natural, much more subdued. So there's a much more sort of friendly, almost familiar feeling to the, you know, moach of the speech. With the difference being, you know, the one or two arguments in particular, again, the fight between the crazy Russian and the Islamic nomadic tribe. That's really the biggest emotional outburst you'll see when showcasing these two distinct, different belief systems. You know, in a way, it's very Jewish in the fact that it's very subdued. You know, it's that, like, you know, it's that very Jewish thing of, like, you know, I could get emotional, but what's it gonna do? I'll get emotional tomorrow. It's a very Jewish thing, in a way. Again, a Jewish feel to it that's very nice. I love the cat's voice acting. I love sort of the craftiness and the sort of jazzy coolness of the voice. Oh, I love his voice. And he's just like, oh, I'm doing it no justice whatsoever. But there's the coolness and the sleekness and the craftiness and sometimes even sliminess to the voice that I thought was done very, very well. The rabbi is extremely Jewish. It's just that thing of, like, you know, think of, you know, Jon Stewart doing a New York rabbi, and you basically got, it's like, you know, I could go to the park or I could not. I could wash my dishes today, but I could not. You know, I can go on a journey to the middle of Africa, or I could not. Well, whatever happens, happens. You know, it's that, you know, if it happened, it happened, and, you know, we could go to the park, and we could feed the lions, and, yeah, no. Oh, we could not. Or, you know, I'm going to be very Jewish, and how about you decide? At that point, you're pulling out your hair like, I don't care, just pick somewhere, why do I have to pick? Jews don't like making choices. it's why we're always on the underneath role, where we make all the money, but not making all the choices. That's here nor there. I'm gonna get my ass kicked for this episode. I know it. But, you know, I thought he had this very fatherly, very familiar, very almost rabbinic feel to his voice that done was very well. And again, that those very Jewish aspects, as I described before. I love Zalba. Again, there was a sexiness to her voice that just, I thought, fit perfectly the character and added to her personality. And gave her character that sort of sexiness along with her character design. And for the most part, I thought all the other voice actors did well. None of them really stood out. Again, maybe that's because it's in French and I'm not familiar. But I thought they all had great delivery. They all had a lot of motion in their speech when they needed it to be there. But again, it was very subdued, a very subdued acting aspect of it that I thought felt very well. But the emotion is there. Just because it's subdued doesn't mean the emotion is there. It's, again, it's that aspect of it, it's not being overdramatic. So, all in all, I thought the voice acting was done extremely well. And by the way, Vostovnov, the, you know, the crazy Russian, not the Russian painter, but the crazy Russian. Yeah, I love it. It's like, at that moment, like, when you first meet him and he starts just spewing things, I'm like, yeah, this guy's gonna die at some point in this journey, isn't he? Well, better him than the rabbi or the Russian painter. But, yeah. So with that, let's move on to story. You know, it's very interesting. You know, there is a main plot and theme. You know, the main plot is, you know, this graphic novel about this cat who wants to be bar mitzvah, basically wanting to be Jewish. And sort of the main themes of this movie are of faith and tolerance. one of, you know, sort of finding your faith in a way. And again, doing it in a very subdued way of, like, you know, finding your faith as it being a heritage, a history, a culture of your family. And then tolerance in the aspect of, you know, constantly showing these different groups of people who are coexisting together. You know, you have the the Jew, you have the Muslim, and you know, they're from the same family, and they coexist, and they have, of course, we argue. I mean, of course, everybody argues, and we have arguments, and we're going to have arguments about, you know, this. But at the end of the day, is it anything to get angry or hate each other about? And of course not. We're going to get along. He's going to pray to Mecca. I'm going to pray to Jerusalem. You know, we have different beliefs and different things, but, you know, we all get along together. The unfortunate thing about the tolerance aspect, though, and again, that theme is there, and I think it's there enough. You know, I was reading one person's review where he says it was too gentle. I don't think it was too gentle. I just think that what hurts it is that they're trying to talk about tolerance, and yet they show, like, one, two. I mean, I was going to say they show one too many scenes where tolerance, they're asking for tolerance, and it doesn't happen. I think back to the Ethiopians, who, I mean, mind you, I mean, they were starting to accept them. I mean, the artist tried to use, let me draw you. And here, you know, as a peaceful authoring, and the guard looks, it's like, great, and it's very racist in a way. But again, I made mention to getting to the cat did a rabbi at the bar mitzvah. So again, you know, the cat, just going back to the Judaism aspect to it, wanting to be Jewish, he decides he wants to have a bar mitzvah, and of course the rabbi gets to agree, I will teach him about Judaism so he can be bar mitzvah. But he really wants to be bar mitzvah, and he goes on this journey, and he finds the Ethiopians, and the cat goes on his own, and he comes across that all the people in this town here are, like, gathered in the center for, I guess it's Saturday morning services, and there's a bar mitzvah going on, and this stupid cat, not my stupid cat, I have a stupid cat here. That's a whole different stupid cat. But this stupid cat literally makes it to the crowd, jumps on the top of these people who've never seen a cat probably before, interrupts the bar mitzvah, says, I'm going to be bar mitzvah too! Shema Yisrael, and I hate it, and I hate. And he starts smiling at them. Cut to scene, cats running through the streets with a, I could say riot. Well, they are rioting, but with a swarm of people for the service rioting and, like, with pitchforks, you know, this angry mob, that's the word I was looking at, this mob, like, wanting to kill this little cat, causing, you know, the Russian and African girl, the cat, to all run away. Again, that goes to the Jewish comedy. We'll get to that. But, you know, that, you know, the Islamic tribe and the Russian. Again, I think they just, some, the theme of tolerance is there, and saying, like, you know, here's the bad aspect of tolerance. But I think they sometimes, I think they could have cut down on showing how many non-tolerance scenes happening. Or, you know, maybe the aspect is, you know, thinking back to it, is that, you know, those scenes, and there's a couple of scenes of, again, going back to, you know, the African who has the racist drawings, towards the end, where it's more stuck in your mind because you've been watching it for an hour, or hour and a half, as this movie is, you have more of these scenes of non-tolerance. And so maybe they're sticking more in my head, because, again, those, the tolerance scenes are a bit more gentle, a bit more subdued. These scenes of non-tolerance happening are more explosive, to put in a way, as they obviously would be. But again, the theme of tolerance is there and is understood because it coincides with this idea of faith, and, you know, the idea of faith being a heritage, a cultural aspect of it, and, you know, to be proud of your heritage, whatever it is. But in regards to, also, there is a very Talmudic and Jewish feel here of, you know, being proud to be Jewish. I think one thing that makes this movie work very, very well is, again, the relationship between the cat, the rabbi, and the rabbi's daughter. Which, again, there's this very family feel. And it makes you instantly like these people and instantly connect with these characters. And that's something that makes the movie, I think, work very well. Because, you know, they have these different personalities and they all fit together and they work like a puzzle that fits together perfectly. And it gives you, like I said, that family feel that works very, very well. Then you have the comedy, that's the other aspect of that. You know, the story, like I said, the plot is very simple. It's, you know, this cat follows the cat who can talk and his experiences with his rabbis, or with his rabbi and his, or his master, who is a rabbi, and his daughter, and the experiences that they feature in 1920s Algeria. Again, being based off this graphic novel. Where I think the story falls apart a bit, also, is the fact that you have it being based off Volume 1 and 2, and then it just jumps to Volume 5. Which is a standalone story, but which starts with, you know, the Russian arriving locked in this crate, which brings questions all upon itself. But I just think that story was very different from Volume 1 and 2. Again, because I've not read the source material, I can't see a connection here. And so I think for me, and I think that's the thing, is that unless somebody's read the graphic novel, that jump from obviously where Volume 2 would end, which is the, you know, the rabbi passing the test and everything, to Volume 5 is very jarring. Because it, even if you've not read the graphic novel, if you watch this movie, you can see where, obviously, this is where Volume 2 must have ended, and this is the start of Volume 5, where the Russian comes in. And it is very jarring. I think for somebody who maybe not read the graphic novel, and in particular not read Volumes 3 and 4 or anything, you know, I think there's something there that people feel lost. I know I felt lost in a way when that jump happened. So that's definitely something that kind of feel hurts the plot, is that jump, because there's something there that I think people watching will feel. I mean, I know I did as well. I felt like there was something missing in between that jump. It wasn't organic as it flowed into that story with the Russian. But something that does work with the movie is the comedy, I think. I love the comedy. Again, I think I am a little bit biased. It's Jewish comedy. It's a very subdued Jewish comedy. It's very natural. And I think works very well. Part of it, you know, the cat, as I talked about, is hilarious throughout the movie. You know, part of Jewish comedy is being very subdued, but being very blunt. And at the same time. It's that, you know, what are you gonna do type of thing. You know, the whole thing, like, you know, when the cat eats the parrot. You know, like, you ate my parrot. Like, no, I didn't. There are feathers all around you. And he's a cat. Who else would have ate the parrot? I did not eat the parrot. Like, you ate the parrot. I did not eat the parrot. I'm like, ugh. It's a Jewish thing. Again, I think, as I'll bring up when I get into final thoughts, I'll bring that up. But yeah, it's something that's very extremely Jewish that I personally find funny and enjoy. But yeah. You know, with that, let's move on to final thoughts. You know, I think this is a really good animation. I think if you're Jewish, it's going to mean a whole lot more to you, because I think there are things in there that you are going to get. Unfortunately, that being said, I think there are aspects for those who aren't Jewish, not because it's extremely religious, but because, you know, some of the comedy and some of the stories, you know, require basically, in a way, being Jewish to understand it sometimes. Because I think there's some jokes that won't make sense to those who aren't Jewish. I think there's a sort of jump in logic or an explanation here or there that doesn't make sense unless you're Jewish. Because, again, a very Talmudic feel of it. And you add the fact that, the jump in the story that, loses even me as it goes towards what is obviously Volume 5. The plot is still simple enough, though. The themes are obvious, and they're not too, they don't hit, they're very gentle with it. No, well, not too gentle, as that one reviewer put. But they don't hit you over the head. It's very, as I kept using, it's, the themes are of sort of faith and tolerance are very subdued. There's also a very natural feel of family and everything in this movie that I think people will enjoy. You add some very, very beautiful animation. A nice little soundtrack that's a bit subdued, unfortunately. And I thought very, very well done voice acting. Overall, I think you get a movie that I think even people that may get a little lost here or there in the movie would somewhat enjoy. I think personally it's a very done animation. I can see why it won award, to go down here. It was named the best animated film in 2011 at the César, which is the French equivalent of the Oscars. It received two nominations at the 40th Annie Awards, which is the Annie Awards is all about animation, and it was nominated there for Best Animated Feature as well, unfortunately losing to, I believe it was Wreck-It Ralph. Let me just check. Actually, it got nominated in 2012, and it lost to Wreck-It Ralph, who won, thank God, because if I go, I looked at this category, the nominees for Best Feature was Wreck-It Ralph, Brave, Frankenweenie, Hotel Transylvania, Paranormal, Pirates and Adventure with Scientists, Rise of the Guardians, and The Rabbi's Cat. Of those, Wreck-It Ralph was better. Thank God, Brave didn't win. And I'm getting biased now. But, anything, how? Very enjoyable. So, overall, I give this a solid 3 out of 5. It's very enjoyable. I can understand, and definitely I think some people will get lost sometimes in it. But at the same point in time, I think it's a very well done film. And, you can feel the heart in the film. And that's the biggest thing about this, is there's a lot of heart in this film. So, that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. If you have any comments of any kind, as we head down the road to 100, now I have to come up with some song in a Brian and Stewie voice, don't I? But if you have any comments of any kind, remember to simply contact the show. One, you can contact us by email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Stitcher account, which you can find by going to www.stitcher.com. That's S-T-I-C-H-E-R. Like us, add us to your playlist, leave us a comment. You can also find us on Facebook by going to www.facebook.com. And by liking us, by searching for the Absolution Network, like us, leave us a comment there. And you can always leave a comment on the webpage itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Of course, while you're there, remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum, Shin Tiger Curl's videos. He just released one on the fighting game community. Check that out. Joan Ramos and his TubeCast. He just released his first episode. It's an amazing little introduction to who he is. I have just checking it out. And, of course, later videos that will come out. The Mega Mix podcast. Of course, my CMJU's wrestling reviews. And, of course, I'm Prerogative right here. Also, you have the Shaft Plus podcast with Gene and Chris. You can find that at www.shaftplus.com. And, of course, my Tokyo SOS podcast, that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. where you can find all my reviews on every Godzilla movie ever made. And of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcasting network, which you can see CMG's Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. Also, make sure you check out all my friends on the sidebar of the site, which you can find, like I said, on the sidebar. They do great stuff that, of course, includes Michael Bailey's Fuse from Law Unboxing from Crisis to Crisis. They does with Jeffrey Taylor, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawl Space, Fever Psychers, Major Spoilers Podcast, of course, Scott Gunner's Two Freaks Podcasting Network, along with many more. So, that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week we have episode 99. It's the last episode before Epic 100. You know what? I'm in the mood for some more family. So next week we're gonna call the Great Gazoo. We're gonna go back to the Stone Age. To a Stone Age family. No, I'm not talking about the Flintstones. I'm talking about the Croods. So until next time, my Toonami generation,
find cover. It's gonna get
stay golden.
Desert. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.